The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Well, it's that common fantasy football dilemma. You're sitting there in round, I don't know, four, whatever. It doesn't matter what round. You're deciding between three or four different players. Chris Godwin, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, maybe David Montgomery is in there. And you say, well, who's got the highest upside? But who's the safest? Who has the highest floor? If the answer to both of those questions is ever the same player, that's the player you should be drafting. But we're going to have those debates at different spots in the draft according to average draft position. Right now on Fantasy Football Today on your Thursday edition, it is Wednesday morning as we record this right now. If there's any breaking news throughout the day on Wednesday, I'm sure we'll have a little red siren and a bonus podcast for you. I'm Adam Azer with Dave Richard and welcoming Chris Towers to the show for the first time this week. What's up, Chris?
Hey. How's it going?
Oh, right. It's early.
Thanks for having me, Adam. Big fan of the show. First time, long time, but I'm really happy to be here and you know, get this opportunity.
Well, it's really the pleasure's all ours. We're going to start with a new game, a new segment called One Good Stat, One Bad Stat. I've got three players
sounds
here.
Sounds familiar.
I resent that. I had the I know I had the idea for this before Heath tweeted it. I had the fungible.
That's not how it works. Right. You know, that's not like just saying like I had an idea for magical space wizards fighting against an authoritarian government in 1975 and George Lucas still put it out there, you know, Adam.
I had the non-fungible token. That's what I was going for before Heath tweeted the one good stat, one bad stat. Here we go. Chris Godwin is first up. I'm going to be a good stat and a bad stat. You're going to give me analysis. He's wide receiver 17 in ADP. Chris Godwin, the good stat. Tampa Bay has been top six in pass attempts for three straight seasons, and Godwin has been on pace for 9 or 10 touchdowns per 16 games, two straight seasons. The bad stat, in the last seven games of the year, not including week 17 when Mike Evans got hurt, so just looking at the healthy games with Evans and Brown, Godwin was only on pace for 978 yards, seven touchdowns on 110 targets. That's okay. It's probably not going to return wide receiver 17 value. So that's your good stat and your bad stat, Dave. Break it down.
So I look at Godwin as one of those safe floor type of receivers. I like the fact that when he averaged 15.4 PPR points per game last year, he actually hit the 15 plus PPR point mark in 7 of 12 games. That was wide receiver 10 in terms of consistency. And he also had a safe floor in non-PPR, 10 points per game in non. There are too many mouths to feed in this offense. It's hard to imagine him having a huge year where he gets 130 plus targets. I think that number will come down. His receiving average also went down last year, and I think that was just a byproduct of him being that short to mid-range target for Tom Brady. Volume helps everybody in this offense to a degree because they throw it as much, like you said, but I don't see the case for him being an upside play. I think when you draft him, you do it as a solid number two fantasy wide receiver who you're hoping for delivers anywhere from 12 to 17 PPR points per game.
Chris?
Yeah, the thing that makes the Buccaneers offense so tough is this really is an offense that ideally you want some part of because they should score a ton of points. The problem is, one, when you look at them before the season and you try to figure out, you know, you try to project who's going to get what, it's really hard to make any of the, you know, all of these guys worth what they're currently going for. But if Antonio Brown misses 10 games, or in the running back side, if Leonard Fournette misses 10 games, all of a sudden the guys who are remaining are going to be so, so, so much more valuable. So it's kind of a high floor in the most likely scenario, high upside in the best case scenario. And there's not a ton of ways things can necessarily go wrong for all of them. unless their 43-year-old quarterback gets hurt. So, you know, it's I don't typically draft anyone from Tampa Bay just because I kind of want to avoid the headache, but I think there is significant upside. It's just it probably requires someone getting hurt.
All right. Our next one will be Aaron Jones. I do want to remind you, though, the Tokyo Olympics are finally here after being delayed a year, and the brand new Attacking Third podcast is your audio home for the most comprehensive U.S. women's national team soccer coverage. Hosts Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman will provide previews and immediate recaps bright and early as soon as the U.S. women's national team matches wrap up in the morning. So download and follow Attacking Third wherever you listen to this podcast. All right, Aaron Jones, he's running back 11 in ADP. Here's your good stat on Aaron Jones. In 2019, well, I'll just sum it up. He's played six games in the last 2 years without Jamal Williams, and he's had 25 catches. That is a 67 catch pace in the six games he's played without Jamal Williams over the last two seasons. That's excellent. The bad news, the bad stat for Aaron Jones, Aaron Rodgers just turned down a lucrative contract extension and has shown no indication that he's coming back to the Packers. We don't know what to make of it right now. So I don't have a bad stat on Aaron Jones, Dave. It's just a bad situation, I guess, potentially. But he has seen an increase in the passing game when Williams hasn't played. So what are your thoughts on Jones, who's RB11 right now?
I think having him at RB11 is a little too low because I think he will see more targets in the passing game. It can either be from Aaron Rodgers, who has leaned on the running backs in the passing game in the past, not necessarily to a crazy high degree, but if A.J. Dillon isn't catching a lot of those passes, then when I heard that pace, it was 67 catches, you said?
Yes.
That's pretty good. I'll take that.
In 16 games.
I think he almost needs something like that because I am worried about a slight touchdown regression. If he's going to share with A.J. Dillon, it just makes sense that A.J. Dillon handles some short yardage goal line work. Not all of it, but some of it. Last year, for an example, on goal-to-go carries, Aaron Jones was 3 of 8. So that's somewhere where the Packers could look at it and say, well, let's see what the big guy can do. If the big guy does well at it, that's going to be a loss of touchdowns for Aaron Jones when he gets close to the goal line. Not that he got them all anyway. Devontae Adams had plenty of them last year to begin with. The other thing that I like about him is that he's been a pretty good stat producer, good consistency. He was 5th in PPR points per game last year. He was at 17 PPR points per game. I think he delivers. And I think he delivers, obviously, if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. But even if he's not, this team will turn into a more conservative, run-centric type of squad. And when they are playing from behind, it'll be easy for Jordan Love to hit Aaron Jones with those short passes. That'll lead to PPR points. I think he'd be worthy of being RB11 or maybe a little bit later than that if there's no Aaron Rodgers. And we for sure know that Aaron Rodgers won't be with the Packers. We don't know that yet. Hasn't been traded yet. He hasn't ruled out returning yet. His country club membership automatically renewed. Who knows what the hell any of this means? But until Aaron Rodgers makes it clear that he's not going to play, he doesn't show up for all of training camp, let's say, I can't worry about what the future holds for Aaron Jones, and I'm going to draft him like Rodgers will be there.
Me?
Yeah, dude, just go for it.
Good morning, Chris.
I think you have to look at the cost-benefit analysis from Rodgers' situation. You know, the country club membership, that's probably like more than our salaries combined. That's not a lot. But on the other hand, I've got a lot of recurring subscriptions and I couldn't tell you what they all are. And so my $5.99 Apple TV subscription might be the equivalent of Aaron Rodgers' golf course country club membership. So, you know, it's hard to say whether that really matters. Now, I think Aaron Jones is being drafted somewhere close to his floor. And if he did catch 67 passes, I just kind of did a quick look at my projections. If he caught 67 passes and kept his yards per reception steady, he'd be RB4 for me, just ahead of Austin Ekeler, just behind Dalvin Cook. So, I don't know. With Aaron Rodgers, like the only guy who's really done what we're worried he might do is Le'Veon Bell, right? Like just didn't show up, didn't play a whole season. It almost never happens.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, but right. What if it's like 4 games? You know,
I don't think that changes Aaron Jones' outlook.
Okay.
If he gets 13 games with Aaron Rodgers and only 4 without him, I think they're going to run the ball with him a ton early on if that's the case, knowing that Aaron Rodgers is going to be back anyway. So, mm-hmm. I think at RB11, he's a great value.
All right. Last one, Leonard Fournette, RB35 in ADP. We'll get to another Tampa Bay Buck here. He's between Damian Harris and Zach Moss. He's actually two running back spots behind Ronald Jones. So it goes Jones, Damian Harris, Fournette, and then Zach Moss. The good stat on Leonard Fournette, the playoffs, 300 yards, three touchdowns on the ground, 148 yards and a touchdown receiving in four games. He averaged 4.7 yards per carry. He was terrific in the playoffs. That's the last time we saw Leonard Fournette. The bad is that in 10 regular season games that he played with Ronald Jones healthy, he scored double-digit non-PPR fantasy points once. He scored double-digit PPR fantasy points twice in 10 games with Ronald Jones. He scored five or fewer PPR fantasy points five times. So he was mostly useless when Ronald Jones was healthy. Chris, in between Damian Harris and Zach Moss for Leonard Fournette, your thoughts?
Was Ronald Jones healthy in the postseason? And was what they did in the postseason a revelation of Bruce Arians' revealed preferences, where, you know, he can say whatever he wants, but when the games got most important, the games got toughest, he leaned on Leonard Fournette heavier. I think the issue with Fournette and Jones comes down to the fact that they are very much the Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man meme. They're not the exact same player. Fournette's probably a little better in passing situations, but I think he's still pretty bad in those. And so all things considered, there's not much differentiation between them. And so I kind of feel like it's just going to continue to be the nightmare that it was last season, where, remember, it was like week one, it was like, oh, this is definitely Ronald Jones's job. And then after week two, Leonard Fournette got like that last drive, and it was like, uh-oh, Leonard Fournette's coming to take it. It just like, it never really settled. There was maybe a three-week stretch where Jones really was the lead back. There was that time where Fournette was a healthy scratch. So I think it's just going to be hot hand, and there's not enough difference between the two of them to know ahead of time who's going to be the guy at any given moment.
You forgot about the most important thing, and it's what they did this offseason, bringing in Giovanni Bernard.
Exactly.
And I don't think they brought in Giovanni Bernard to only play sparingly. I think that he can fill that passing downs role. He's a good pass blocker. He's a very good receiver out of the backfield. He can even run a little bit with the ball. So he's going to have his role. That's a role that Ronald Jones will never touch again, and Fournette would have in the event that Gio gets hurt. So what's left on the bone for these running backs? It's just the early downs rushing role, maybe short yardage goal line role. That's going to be in play too. I think all of that favors Fournette just because I think the coaches trust him a little bit more. But my this is just a guess. I think it's going to be kind of like what you said, Chris. It's going to be a competition in camp. Whoever has the hotter hand in practice gets to play more that week, at least at the start of the games. They'll probably rotate those two. Maybe they rotate a series where first series Fournette is the running downs back. Second series, it's Rojo. Third series Fournette, fourth series Rojo. Second half, whoever did better in the first half plays a little bit more. We're not going to know from week to week. It makes it hard to draft these guys in fantasy, hoping that they become number two running backs for your team.
Okay.
So you probably just shouldn't do it.
Would you draft Zach Moss or Damian Harris over a Bucks running back?
I don't have it ranked that way. And it's because I'm nervous about Harris's production in an offense orchestrated by Cam Newton. And I think the Bills have resigned to not running the ball as much as most teams do. And so that means that Moss will split with Singletary the limited number of touches that they have. I don't think any of the running backs you named are poised to be like top 15 options, maybe not even top 20 options.
Yeah, I think you look at it like this. If something were to happen to Leonard Fournette or to Ronald Jones, the other one would probably be a top 24 running back.
No doubt.
I can't envision a world in which Damian Harris or Zach Moss, like top 24, I think they can be, but there's a lot of pretty scrubby running backs who end up in the top 24 just by, you know, entropy alone. I think, you know, Jones or Fournette could be top 12 guys in the right situation. I don't think there's any way in which Damian Harris and Zach Moss are top 12 running backs for fantasy.
Well, Gio wasn't on the team last year, but when those guys got the feature work, when Jones was playing and Fournette wasn't, or Fournette was playing and Jones wasn't in the regular season, they were top 10 good. They were great. So that's to your point. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll start our discussion, highest upside versus highest floor. We'll look at your two running backs. We'll look at, basically, I picked a group of players from almost every round, beginning in round two or three, and we'll just go down the list and debate highest upside versus highest floor and how much you should pay attention to that on draft day. All right, we'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
So let's start with a group of your two running backs. Who has the highest upside? Who has the highest floor? Antonio Gibson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift. Gibson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift. Who has the highest upside?
I'll say Gibson does. I think Gibson can work his way into an every down role on a good football team where he can catch a lot of passes and get short yardage goal line work.
Chris, highest upside. Gibson, Edwards-Helaire, Swift.
I think it's probably Swift. I just think he could be Austin Eckler-esque with more running work in a best case scenario. And I think Gibson could be that, but we've seen Swift have that role in the passing game that we haven't seen from Gibson yet. So I feel a little more comfortable projecting that for a best case scenario.
And who's got the highest floor, Gibson, Edwards-Helaire, or Swift?
See, that one I do think is Gibson.
I think it's Gibson too.
Well, there you go. That's for Dave. That means Gibson.
I mean,
that,
he's right at the top of the list among those three. So of course, makes sense to have him there.
Well, I don't know that that's always going to be the case, right? If you have some player ranked higher, you might think someone behind him has more upside. But I think that it's a pretty clear cut for you that Gibson's number one of those three. And Chris, who's your favorite then? Who are you ranking highest, Gibson, Edwards-Helaire, or Swift?
I actually do have CEH slightly higher, but I mean, you're talking about the difference between him and Gibson in my rankings or my projections is 1.2 points, and then Swift is 6 points behind them. So it's there's very little difference between like probably RB9 and RB17.
I know that, but if you did not name Edwards-Helaire as having the highest upside or the highest floor in this trio of running backs, should you then go away from your projections and take Gibson or Swift ahead of him?
Maybe. I do think it might be a situation where his floor and his ceiling are just slightly lower than each of the other twos. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to how much more can they use him? Will they use him in the passing game? I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to upside, especially for CEH.
I think he's got to get used more in short yardage goal line situations too.
Sure.
If he can be used more in the passing game and not have that goal line work and still not hit the ceiling that fantasy managers kind of lay out for him.
Yeah.
He needs both of those things. And Gibson has the goal to go role. He had it last year. I assume he's going to have it again. I don't think Peyton Barber, sorry, Adam, or JD McKissick are going to be in line to take that work away from him. And I think both of these guys have a chance to grow their passing game role. Mm-hmm. So that's why I've got Gibson ahead of Edwards-Helaire. I really like the talent of Edwards-Helaire. I think the offensive line is going to be awesome in Kansas City, but that's a team that's got, you know, the generational quarterback. They're not going to get away from him. And last year was proof of that. especially near the goal line.
Okay, next up, let's go with four wide receivers being taken in round two or three. We're going highest upside and highest floor. Calvin Ridley, DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, and AJ Brown. Ridley, Metcalf, Jefferson, and Brown, highest upside. Dave?
I will say Calvin Ridley has the highest upside. We've seen it. We saw it last year. He had 20.1 PPR points per game in the seven games without Julio Jones on the field for Atlanta. Now, we know he doesn't have Julio on the field with him this year. He's got Kyle Pitts with him. I think he can still hit that average and still see a ton of targets in a high-volume passing attack. I don't think the Falcons are going to turn into a rushing team just because the guy that used to call plays for the Titans is now the play caller for the Falcons. And I think he's got potential for just a game-breaking type year where he gets 140-plus targets, flirts with 100 catches, gets well over 1,300 yards, and hits double digits in touchdowns.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Ridley is the choice, actually, for both, but specifically for the upside. He led the NFL in air yards last season, and I think he was like 300 above the number two guy. And now you could say that he didn't score as much as a lot of those guys. So, you know, maybe that's a question of whether he'll be able to hit that upside. But I really do think that he's going to be a legitimate alpha wide receiver, like all of these guys are, but in an offense that throws a lot more and airs it out, you know, throws downfield more. And so when you're talking about what constitutes upside for a wide receiver, I think Calvin Ridley has all of that in his favor.
I think the question's more interesting if you take Ridley out of it.
Okay.
The receivers that are left are Jefferson, Metcalf, and AJ Brown.
Yes.
I don't know if I can answer which one has the highest upside. You can make the case for each one of them. If Metcalf got the volume, he would easily, I think he'd beat out Jefferson and AJ Brown. Jefferson was amazing last year. The Vikings threw a ton last year. I'm not sure they're going to have to throw as much this year.
They didn't throw a ton. Defenses.
I think they threw a ton
late in the year when he really last eight games, Kirk Cousins threw like 38 times a game.
That's a lot.
Or 36, but that is a lot. But for the season,
but I don't think that happens over the course of 21.
No, but for the season, they had the sixth fewest pass attempts in the NFL. So it was a tale of literally first half, very, very run heavy. Second half, they threw the ball a lot and he was much better in the second half.
Brown is just a hell of a player who's got awesome efficiency metrics on his side. I think the Titans do throw a little bit more than they did last year.
So I'm going to make you pick one, Dave. Who's got the highest upside between Jefferson, Metcalf, and Brown?
I will say DK Metcalf, but that's going to be based on him just being such a difficult matchup on the field for defenses to deal with. And the Seahawks potentially, they're changing their passing scheme for sure, but it's on the hunch that they throw, you know, 55% of the time, which for them is a lot.
Okay, Chris, who has the highest floor, Metcalf, Jefferson, or Brown?
I think it's Brown for both. Just the insane levels of efficiency that he's shown so far in his career. Like, DK Metcalf has been awesome. He's been really, really efficient. He's at 9.6 yards per target. AJ Brown's at 11.2. I think what it comes down to is I think AJ Brown is the best player of the three of these guys. And I think he might be just the next best wide receiver in football for the next 5 years. Like Justin Jefferson, again, had this incredible rookie season where he averaged 11.2 yards per target. That's what AJ Brown's done over the course of two whole seasons with, you know, over 190 targets. He's just, what he's shown us so far is like Julio Jones levels of efficiency, except with a bunch of touchdowns too.
Okay.
When you talk about the efficiency for AJ Brown, I just want to put this out there. He's been in the league just for two seasons. He's been top 10 in yards after catch per reception, yards per route run, and missed tackles forced each of those two seasons. Last year, he was top 8 in both red zone touchdowns and inside the 10 touchdowns among wide receivers. Well, and now he's got Julio Jones playing opposite him. So
you usually don't see guys who get a lot of deep targets or guys with the deep average depth of target get a lot of yak as well. Those two things have an inverse correlational relationship.
Sure.
AJ Brown it's like AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson last year, George Kittle, Darren Waller, a couple other guys are like, it's rare to be able to do both. And AJ Brown is one of the best at both,
yeah,
or at the combination of both. So
right,
that's really where it's like, oh, this guy is like potentially a Hall of Famer, frankly.
Wow. Yeah, terrific. Okay. Let's go to our next group of players here. I got three wide receivers and a running back, but I have two Bears and two Cowboys. So who's got the highest upside and highest floor? Allen Robinson and David Montgomery, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. Robinson, Montgomery, Lamb, and Cooper. When you look at this group, Dave, who has the highest upside?
For fantasy, David Montgomery has the highest upside,
mm-hmm,
because of just the nature of how running backs rack up points. And we saw it from him last year when he had favorable matchups down the stretch. We've talked about it a dozen times. He was on fire. And now there's talk in Chicago that they want to keep feeding him the football. And when the game is going the Bears' way, he's going to be the one that gets a lot of touches. I don't know how many games are going to go the Bears' way this year, but I suspect they'll be in a bunch of competitive games. And that'll still help Montgomery rack up both carries and catches. He averaged 4.5 targets per game, whether Tariq Cohen was healthy or not, whether they had an easy schedule or not.
Wait a second. Wait. He did not average 4.5 targets per game when
Tariq Cohen. He did in his first 9 games.
But
so
that,
maybe some
but
of those games
not,
were without Tariq,
yeah,
Cohen on the field.
6 of those games were without Tariq Cohen on the field, I'm pretty sure.
We'll see. We'll see if that number dips this year with Tariq Cohen there. I suspect that they still feed him the football through the air. Maybe not 4.5, but it could be 3.5. Still could lead to 3 catches per game for Montgomery. You'll take that. Goal line role, that's his. Lead role, that's his. Offensive line isn't bad. I think that when you're talking about upside for all these guys, I think Montgomery's got the chance to get more yards than any of these receivers and more touchdowns than any of these receivers.
Chris, you agree?
Yeah, although what complicates it is the fact that he barely outscored Allen Robinson last season, which I was shocked to see. He was like 1.5 points ahead. He did play one fewer game.
That's PPR?
Yeah, in PPR. So
right, you know, Allen Robinson's almost a lock for 150. Now, with an extra game, probably 160 targets. He's been 150-plus 2 straight years with Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I guess I could see an argument that in a full PPR league, he could have, you know, 60 more catches than David Montgomery or something like that. And thus would have more upside. You know, I mean, obviously the running back, but the thing is the running back's easier to make the case. I think Robinson's going ahead of Montgomery.
Yeah.
In ADP. Sure. So, all right, then we can shift our attention to the highest floor in this group. Is that Robinson? Robinson, yes. Montgomery, Lamb, and Cooper?
Yeah, for me, it's Robinson because of the target share that he's had the past 2 seasons and what he's done with it with bad quarterbacks the past 2 seasons. 16.1 PPR points per game in 2020, 15.5 in 2019. I'm sure he'll fall at least to 15.5 as a floor this year with Dalton and Justin Fields there, and he's going to continue to get force-fed targets. It's kind of an easy case. He's kind of a no-brainer pick. When you're up and there isn't a running back you love and there isn't a receiver you love and the top 3 tight ends are gone and you don't feel like taking a quarterback, it's an instant smash on the draft button.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or unless you want to say, hey, the Cowboys are going to throw for 1,000 more yards than the Bears. And maybe 15 more touchdowns. You know, it wouldn't shock me if the Bears had 20 touchdowns and the Cowboys had 35, or maybe that's 37 and 22, something like that. Unless you want to say, hey, I'd rather have Cooper or Lamb. It's not being drafted that way, but I guess I could see a case that Robinson, I just made the case that he does have the upside because of all the targets, but even with those targets, he hasn't been really a stud on a per game basis. He's been really, really good. But I would not call him a stud.
Neither have Cooper or Lamb.
No.
I guess Cooper wasn't that 4 or 5 games.
Right.
They weren't going to keep throwing for 6,500 yards or whatever they were on pace for. And then,
yeah,
you know, I think it's kind of like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers situation where we love these guys and we think they're awesome. I think Michael Gallup's getting a little overlooked. You know, in that the way we talk about Antonio Brown, I think Michael Gallup should be talked about the same way as a guy who, being the third guy in the offense, could be a really useful fantasy option. And that's one thing that Chicago doesn't have, is really a second guy, let alone a third guy, depending on how much you like Darnell Mooney.
Sure.
They've got a bunch of guys who are going to fill in to be the second guy each week.
Yeah.
I think there could be a few weeks where Montgomery ends up being that second guy.
Mm-hmm. All right. So between Robinson, Montgomery, Lamb, and Cooper, it seems like you're not taking one of the Cowboys first. But if Robinson and Montgomery are sitting there, you already have one running back and one receiver, who are you taking?
Because of position scarcity, I might lean toward Montgomery. But the answer is really Robinson, because he's the safest play and he still has some good upside. Like, if you were to tell me, I told you Montgomery had the highest upside. I think the second highest upside is Robinson.
Okay. Yeah. And the high, combined with the highest floor, he gets the
number. Combined with the highest floor.
Okay, next group. Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, Josh Jacobs, and Travis Etienne. Two wide receivers, two running backs. Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, Josh Jacobs, Travis Etienne. Who has the highest upside in this group, Chris?
I may be alone on this one, but I think it's Julio Jones walking away. He is so efficient. They're going to be so concentrated in targets. I think he's still going to be 135, 140 target guy. And for once, he's not the best red zone guy. So maybe he actually does score 9 touchdowns this season. I think it's Julio.
I think it's Julio too. If he stays healthy for 17 games, I think there's no doubt that he'll still see a high target share. I don't think it'll be quite as high as he had in Tennessee. Percentage-wise, it will be, but not overall number. But I think that his touchdowns could still hit 8, 9, maybe 10. Can he get 10 touchdowns for once in his career? Wouldn't that be special? Or twice in his career?
17 games.
I guess if you told me James Robinson only played 2 games, that's the only other way I could argue.
You can make the case for ETN? Sure.
I should have said this. I don't think I did. I want to do this exercise as if nobody's getting injured this year. It's easy to say, well, this if he gets
sure,
hurt,
but
blah,
we
blah,
talk.
Blah.
We've already talked about how injuries can impact other players and
not
whatnot.
Much.
But you're right, right. I think overall, when we're talking upside and floor, we can't say, well, if this guy gets hurt, then yes, of course. I think that goes without saying that if James Robinson were to miss almost the whole season, that ETN would have the highest upside. As things stand, but part of the reason why I think Julio has the highest upside is because if he stays healthy, he'll get there.
Yeah.
We don't know if he can stay healthy. I don't think anybody's drafting Julio Jones expecting him to play 17 games.
I think if you want to make a case that this player that we're talking about is injury prone, I guess that's one thing. But if you want to say, well, if Kenyon Drake gets hurt, then Josh Jacobs, we can't go through all the scenarios where I give you 4 players and you start talking about all their teammates getting hurt. That's what I
also
meant.
That gets into the nature of the discussion. Julio Jones might have the highest upside, but because of the recurring nature of the hamstring injuries he suffered last season, he probably can't be the safest.
So who is? Godwin, Julio Jones, Jacobs, Etienne, highest floor?
I think it's Godwin in PPR.
I think it's either Godwin or Jacobs.
It would be Jacobs in non-PPR.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, this next group, this is really where I start to scratch my head a little bit in drafts. Yeah. DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Lockett. DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Lockett. Dave, most upside.
I want to say Lockett because we saw it last year. How like his end of season numbers were amazing. If we're not looking for consistency from a player, we're just looking for a guy that's going to end the year with a huge average and, you know, a lot of fantasy points. I think it is Lockett just by his nature, the way that he plays, where he'll have a bunch of dud games and then he'll break out for 3 touchdowns and 180 yards in a game.
I hate this group so much. So again, it's DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Lockett. Chris, who do you think has the most upside?
I think it's more just because I think he's so incredibly talented. Like, I think in the right situation, he could absolutely be the next Stephon Diggs type breakout. I think he's that kind of talent. And maybe Sam Darnold makes a Josh Allen-like leap, and that can happen. But I think it's a pretty low probability event.
Who has the highest floor? Moore, Deontay Johnson, Kupp, and Lockett.
I think now with Akers being hurt, I'm comfortable saying Kupp
that's
in PPR.
That's what I was going to say.
I think it's either Kupp or Johnson gets so many targets.
I know. And so I agree. I think it's down to those two for safest floor. But I feel like we have to, ignore last year for Cup because he didn't have a lot of touchdowns. He still had a ton of targets. He did very well in terms of target share per game. He was top 12 in that stat. He's still a good slot receiver. That's still going to be somebody that's going to be a focal point of the offense. Upgrade a quarterback with Matthew Stafford there now. And without Akers there, I feel like Sean McVay is going to have a license to just call pass plays at will. And it's going to help, especially in the red zone. And that's where Cup was a stud 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was in the red zone. He's going to be able to pick up that role a little bit more now because of the run game question mark in LA.
I was kind of excited to be on the anti-Stafford island. I was going to basically just be the guy who never had Stafford and thought he was going way too high. I really think the Akers injury changes that outlook.
100%.
Yeah, I just don't think they're going to have as good of a running game, especially if Daryl Henderson can't stay healthy, which is already a problem. You know, he wasn't.
Adam, we're not talking about other players' injuries, though.
Cup is absolutely my favorite
of this group, and he was before the injury. Mm-hmm. Cup's been a top 15 wide receiver for me basically since the first time I did my projections. I think him and Robert Woods are going to have awesome seasons.
It's hard for me to say that Cup's safer than Lockett because they both, at the end of the year, get their numbers, you know?
I think part of it comes down to, I guess I'm assuming Lockett's older, but he's a year older, so it doesn't really matter that much. But, you know, they're both 28, 29. Lockett will be 29 by week 4 or something. So, you know, they're just at the age where you think, well, the decline might start now. I do think Deontay Johnson, you could make a case for him having both the highest floor and the highest ceiling just because he's the only one of these guys who realistically could catch 120 passes in a 17-game season. And it's a question of whether, one, he can be more efficient with those passes and not drop, you know, 10% of them like he did last season, and find a little more room to operate in an offense that maybe won't be quite so conservative as it was last season. I do think Deontay Johnson has, you know, not Michael Thomas's best seasons, but the sub-peak Michael Thomas seasons, given the target volume he could get.
I think the argument could be made that he's second best in both categories.
Sure.
I just don't know how to evaluate Pittsburgh last year versus Pittsburgh this year. I think they're going to try to have a different offense. More running and more downfield throwing. They're going to try.
They're absolutely going to do more running because they barely did running. They barely ran the ball last year. It was 20.1 running back rush attempts per game. And that was among the lowest in the league. Roethlisberger and the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh, 41-something pass attempts per game. That was the highest by over an attempt per game from Dallas last year. So they're definitely going to run the ball more. That's been an edict from the front office all the way down. And it's going to hurt the overall target numbers for all three of those receivers.
All right, let's go to our next group here. It's three tight ends, highest upside, highest floor. TJ Hockenson, Kyle Pitts, Mark Andrews. What do you got? Hockenson, Pitts, Andrews. Dave, who has the highest upside?
The highest upside is the rookie who is falling into this very nice role in Atlanta. Team, we've already talked about it with Calvin Ridley. They're going to throw the ball a solid amount this year, if not like a crazy high amount. He's going to be a difficult matchup. There will be some growing pains with him. He's a rookie tight end. These things happen. But he still has the upside to finish the year with. This sounds crazy when you think about rookie tight ends, so just bear with me on it. But potential is there for him to get over 1,000 yards in 17 games, to get eight touchdowns in 17 games, to get over 65 catches in 17 games. It might be more like 75 catches over 17 games. He's going to get used a ton. And yes, I think they'll throw a lot. And Arthur Smith, you remember what he did with tight ends? He used them quite well in Tennessee last year. He's going to do the same thing in Atlanta.
Chris, who is the highest floor of those three tight ends, Hockenson, Andrews, Pitts?
I think it's Andrews, and I think that probably puts me out of the consensus because I would guess Hockenson with his expected role would be viewed as the highest floor guy, but Andrews, even given the relatively low target share, he's been so efficient, and the connection between him and Lamar Jackson has been so good, with the exception really of like a weird five games to start last season, that I don't think he has the upside of either Hockenson or Pitts because I just don't think the target upside is there, but if you're talking about who can I rely on, who do I feel most confident in relying on as a starting 10 end out of this group, I think it is Andrews because of what should be a very high touchdown rate and a very efficient role in the offense.
So who are you guys drafting first of these three tight ends?
It's format dependent for me. If it's PPR, I'm taking Hockenson, then Andrews, then Pitts, which means I'm probably not getting Pitts. In non-PPR, I currently have it as Andrews, Hockenson, Pitts. I am thinking about moving Pitts ahead of Hockenson and non-PPR. I agree with Chris. I think that the target volume for Hockenson is going to be huge. I think that's what you have to hope for when you take Hockenson, is that he just gobbles up targets this year.
Yeah, I've got it ranked Andrews, Hockenson, Pitts in both formats, actually.
And what? Okay. Let's go to these running backs now. We're in the mid rounds, rounds five, basically round five. Maybe Chase Edmonds does not make it into round five, but I've got five running backs. So this is a big group. Who has the most upside? Mike Davis, Kareem Hunt, Miles Gaskin, Daryl Henderson, Chase Edmonds. So it's Davis and Gaskin who get lumped together all the time. Kareem Hunt, now Daryl Henderson, and Chase Edmonds. Chris, who would you say has the highest upside?
I think it's Kareem Hunt, obviously.
Wait a sec.
But that's
no,
playing the
no
injury
Chubb
game.
Injury. No Chubb injury.
Sure, but that's the only case for Kareem Hunt having the upside. But you have to take it into account when you're playing with him, because he doesn't need multiple injuries. He just needs, like, if he just gets a chance. But sure, if we want to say that, no injuries, if everybody stays healthy, it's probably not Kareem Hunt. It's probably...
It's tough. It's tough.
This is tough.
Henderson, but I think it's a lot easier to answer who has the highest floor, which is nobody. Like, I don't think you can look at any of these five guys and assume that you can feel confident that they'll be a number two running back all season, because there's just like the answer to that might be Hunt, just because the other guys could all just be out of the rotation after a few weeks. I could see that happening with any of them.
Oh,
so,
I don't know about with Henderson. There's not a lot of competition there.
There isn't a lot of competition, yes. But like, I don't know, maybe other people view him differently, but I feel like the Rams kind of view him as just, he's just there at this point. Although I guess maybe the fact that they didn't bring anybody to back him up behind, you know, him and Akers, maybe that is a vote of confidence in Henderson. I don't know. I guess maybe it's Henderson for both. I don't feel super strongly about either one.
I think not having anybody behind Henderson is just a byproduct of them not having draft capital, because they've spent it all to get guys like Jalen Ramsey on their team. I think I'm going to go against my rankings here. I think the guy with the highest upside, not including Nick Chubb injury, is Henderson. And I think the guy with the safest floor is also Henderson. Just based on, as of now, there isn't anybody there that's going to take Henderson off the field. I agree with you, Chris. It's one of the reasons why I don't have Henderson ranked particularly high. I think the Rams coaching staff isn't in love with Daryl Henderson. Yeah. The evidence of that is how they didn't give Henderson a role once Cam Akers was healthy and back in the swing of things. And maybe that was just because Akers was so good. But I feel like they've seen enough of Henderson to know that he can play at the NFL level. They just don't necessarily trust him to do everything at the NFL level. They barely let him play on third downs. He was okay in pass protection when he did have pass protection. He's had 30 pass protection snaps over his career, so he doesn't get that role a lot. Everybody is pointing to him. Well, he's a great pass catcher out of the backfield. That was true in college. He hasn't caught a lot of passes in the NFL.
Yeah, hasn't been true yet.
The one thing that I do like about Henderson is that he was successful in short yardage situations, like well above most running backs over the past couple of years, and I can bring up those numbers. I think the Rams don't really have a choice right now. Like, their options are Daryl Henderson or one of the free agent running backs that are out there, or one of the unproven running backs they have on their roster.
Yeah.
And maybe they wait for someone to shake free in late August when cuts are made, and they add somebody then. Maybe they call up Tampa Bay and they say, hey, what do you want for Ronald Jones? You know, we need a guy who can give us some yang to Daryl Henderson's yin. I think that as it stands now, the coaching staff doesn't have a choice. They've got to use Henderson to at least a moderate degree. I don't know if that means that he's going to end up being like dominant, but if they really don't add anybody, that helps his upside because he'll play 55% of the snaps, let's call it. Maybe it'll be more like 65% of the snaps. And even if his floor is still pretty good, because if they don't add anybody, he's still going to play 55% of the snaps. He's got to stay healthy through it all.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that we haven't had Chase Edmonds here, you know, that you guys didn't say him. If the reports are, the report is accurate that it's not really a competition and that he is the starting running back, or he's going to be the starting running back for the Cardinals.
But is he going to be the every down back for the Cardinals? And is he going to work short yardage goal line? I think he's had one career carry inside the five.
He's going to get the catches, but the goal line is the question. Yeah. All right.
He'll get the catches.
All right. This is a good discussion on that group. And it didn't inspire a lot of confidence in drafting those running backs. The price has got to be right. But they all have upside.
I think when you're drafting, I think Henderson's got to be the choice now. He's the easiest one to see getting to a top 12 finish, I think.
19 for 25 on all downs, 3 yards or closer last year. And goal to go from inside the three, 4 for 7 on converting, and 3 for 4 from 1 yard out. That's pretty good.
It is. And I think that probably honestly speaks to the offensive line as well.
Yes.
He's, you know, watching a lot of him yesterday, and Dave, and I know you watch a ton of film, and Chris, you do too. He doesn't have, in my opinion, a great burst, but once he gets going, he's big. He's a big dude. Once he gets going, he can be pretty dangerous. So I think he's going to need his offensive line to be good. And luckily, he should have a good offensive line, Darrell Henderson. Would you basically agree with that analysis of him? I'm not a film shark, but...
I'm not sure if I'm ready to say he's got... I think quantifying his offensive line as good is fair.
PFF has them eighth. He's not like a burner right out of the gates, but because he's
too,
bigger.
Right. He doesn't instantly accelerate.
Yeah, but he can get going. Once you give him a little space, he can make things happen.
And that speaks to his efficiency when you look at his, you know, like yards per carry and yards per catch. It's helped those numbers.
Let's do a little more here. Let's do a few more. How about most upside? DJ Chark, Jerry Jeudy, Robbie Anderson, and Devontae Smith. DJ Chark, Jerry Jeudy, Robbie Anderson, Devontae Smith. Who is the most upside?
Jeudy. I think there's a pretty decent chance we're talking about him as a top 12 wide receiver next season. It's going to depend on quarterback. Well, I guess, can we do no injuries, no Aaron Rodgers trades?
Yes.
Sure.
I think he's such a ridiculously talented wide receiver, and the issues that he had last season, specifically with drops, I don't have any concerns about that. It wasn't really a problem for him in college. It was really just one game where he dropped, 5 or 6 passes, and then they went back to him, and he had arguably his best game of the season the following week. So I don't think that matters. I think the fact that he was targeted so much and the fact that he was open so much is what matters there. The QB play is the question. I think the drops were, you know, a Jerry Jeudy issue. They were a Drew Lock issue. I think Drew Lock is not good, but I'm hopeful that he can at least get better. But I'm very confident that the QB play will be better in Denver, just because whether it's Drew Lock taking a step forward or whether it's Teddy Bridgewater, the floor is much higher in Denver than it was last season. And so I think Jerry Jeudy could, you know, he could very easily put together an 85 catch, 1,100 yard, 7 touchdown season, and it wouldn't surprise me that much.
Jeudy had 113 targets last year. 58.1% of those targets were catchable. That was second worst among wide receivers who had at least 100 targets last year. I'm kind of rooting for Teddy Bridgewater to get the job, because I think he can throw a more accurate ball. I think that Bridgewater and Jeudy, I think there have been reports that they've been connecting this offseason. They're both South Florida guys, so that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Like us. We connect. We're South Florida guys.
We are, and we do connect. Yeah. Thank you very much. I don't know how we would connect on a football field.
There were a lot of reports about us connecting. Do you agree that Jeudy has more upside than Chark, Robbie Anderson, Smith?
It comes down to Jeudy or Devontae, honestly.
Yeah.
But I've got a little bit more faith in Jeudy than I do in Smith. I really like Devontae Smith. I think he's going to be a really good fit in Philadelphia.
Who's got the highest floor? Chark, Jeudy, Anderson, Devontae Smith.
I think with that one, you go with Robbie. Yeah. Especially in PPR, it's based on what we saw last year, the target volume that he had, the role in the offense, the fantasy production that he had, the consistency that he had. I think that he can keep that up for the most part. Having McCaffrey back might change those numbers a little bit, might make it worse a little bit. Having Darnold at quarterback might make those numbers worse a little bit, but I still believe that he can get you modest production weekly that could end up being good over the course of the season.
Okay. And we'll do a quarterback here. We haven't done this. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Jalen Hurts. Rodgers in the scenario starting week one for the Packers. Tom Brady, Rodgers, Jalen Hurts, most upside.
It has to be Hurts, right? For fantasy purposes, for the numbers that you get for rushing at quarterback, he's going to blow away the other two there. He's a candidate for 1,000 rush yards. And that's on top of whatever he does as a passer. And I think, I'm sure he's going to go through some skids this year passing the football. He'll be off target. And there could be a couple of games where you look at how he does and you just puke all over the place. But I think he's also going to have some peak games where he's going to be accurate. He's going to look good. I think Devontae Smith is going to help him look good. I think Rager is going to help him look good. Goddard will help him look good. And I think that offensive line will give him time to be just a little bit more relaxed, have things slow down just a little bit more. And he gets that accuracy from 19 yards in to go up a little bit. So I think for as far as fantasy points go, not necessarily NFL game wins, I think that Jalen Hurts has the highest upside.
It is always tough to answer a question like this because, like, Aaron Rodgers was QB1 in total points and 6 points per passing touchdown league last season. He was at 29.9 per game. I think he was also QB1 in points per game, if I'm seeing it right. So it's like, well, how do you go against that? Does Jalen Hurts have 30-point per game upside? You know, that would be what Lamar Jackson did in 2019. I really like Jalen Hurts. I don't know if he can do that. But again, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers can do 48 touchdowns and 5 interceptions again. So I do think it's probably Hurts, but Rodgers being a close second.
I think it's definitely Hurts in 4-point per passing touchdown leagues.
Sure.
And then you can have the debate in 6-point. Highest floor between Brady, Rodgers, and Hurts. That's definitely not Hurts.
No. Hurts could get benched.
I mean, is it the 43-year-old who's coming off a torn MCL? I guess, because yes. Aaron Rodgers might not show up and Jalen Hurts could be benched by week 4.
Well, I also think you're going to get so many more pass attempts from the Bucks than the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I think that's actually an easy one for me. Brady has the highest floor.
Yeah.
Yep. He has a higher floor than Aaron Rodgers. That's an easy one for me, sure. Why not? All right, guys. Real quick here. No analysis, just highest upside, highest floor. Matthew Stafford, Ryan Tannehill, Joe Burrow. Highest upside.
Tannehill.
Burrow.
Yes, that is another tough one. All right, highest floor, Stafford, Tannehill, or Burrow?
After the Akers injury, Stafford.
I think so.
I really wanted to be anti-Stafford. I just don't think I could do it anymore. I'm definitely pro the draft-a-thon, and you all should be too. This is an amazing thing that we've been doing. It's for an incredible cause. All the proceeds are supporting St. Jude. So our 4th annual draft-a-thon is on September 1st. Last year, we auctioned off a bunch of things, Zoom calls with our experts, being in a league with us, smack talk videos, those types of things. And again, we've benefited St. Jude. If you have any ideas about what you would like to see auctioned off to incentivize donations to St. Jude, please leave your ideas on this YouTube video, tweet at us, or send us an email, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We will be auctioning off spots in next year's Scott Fish Bowl to compete against us. So that's next year, but it's still a pretty cool thing to be bidding on. September 1st is the draft-a-thon. I think we're going to be having bidding before that, so just stay tuned and help St. Jude. Speaking of that email address, here we go, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Ooh, damn, I don't have a name or a city here. Dave, help me out.
Dolores from Orlando, Florida.
Dolores says, hey, Shadow, Chance, and Sassy.
The incredible Homeward Bound.
Yes.
Is that right?
How do you know that, Chris?
The Incredible Journey. That was a staple as a kid. The remake from the 90s with, is that Michael J. Fox?
I actually don't Sally know Field? Anything about this movie other than that it's about dogs. Yeah, I was more of a Milo and Otis guy. So I've been doing, was that the name of the movie? Milo and Otis?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah,
I hope so. I've been doing several mock drafts. Help me out with this situation. In round three, do I go with a wide receiver like Terry McLaurin or Allen Robinson or a second running back? This is from Drew, by the way. I'm
not
sorry.
Dolores.
Not Dolores. Drew from the sports Damn city it. Of There's Always Next Year. I don't know where that is. Anyway,
it's Cleveland.
Do you take the running back? He said a second running back with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, so I don't know.
I mean, maybe he meant to say a second running back like Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
McLaurin, Robinson, or the running backs that go in that range. Maybe that's Dobbins, Montgomery, Carson, something like that.
Well, I'm looking at NFC ADP for July. The running backs that are there in the round four range are Carson, Jacobs, ETN.
Oh, I think Robinson and McLaurin go ahead of them. This is a round three pick.
Yeah, let me finish making my point, sir. If you're comfortable with any of those three running backs being your RB2, you take Robinson. If those
over
three
McLaurin?
Running backs make you nervous,
wait, over McLaurin?
I would take Robinson over McLaurin.
Interesting. Okay.
If you are totally comfortable with one of those running backs, maybe you disagree with us on Josh Jacobs, then go ahead and take Robinson because one of those running backs should make it back to you in round four. But I'm always concerned about my running back starters. I want to have good ones. You have to draft them early.
Me too.
The receivers that are there in the round four range, let me just run down this list for you. Mike Evans, Robert Woods, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, DJ Moore is there. Deontay Johnson brings up the rear. I'm happy with any of those receivers as a consolation prize for not having Robinson or McLaurin and still getting a running back like CEH or Dobbins or maybe even David Montgomery if it's late in round three.
I just kind of think once you get past like 25 overall, maybe 30, maybe 20, depending on how you look at it, the running back is going to be worse than the wide receiver at pretty much every point in the draft after the first couple of rounds. It just kind of wider, and it's going to get more true as you go on. You know, the 30th wide receiver is so much better than the 30th mm-hmm. running back.
You know what though, Chris? There's actually, I think this is a really interesting subject, but
thank you.
It's probably worth debating earlier in a subsequent episode, but now that I don't know where Henderson's ADP is going to fall, but if you just look at where Mike Davis and Miles Gaskin are going, let me just check. This might be an area where the running backs might actually shift to being better. Miles Gaskin, Kareem Hunt, Mike Davis going with Jamar Chase,
those guys are
T. Higgins,
in
Brandon
like the
Ayuk.
60 to 75 range in NFC drafts. I don't think that's really how drafts are
going to
happen.
They're going 57 to 60. They're not quite that low. But that is an interesting spot because it's Jamar Chase, it's Brandon Ayuk, it's T. Higgins, and then it's Gaskin, Davis, and Hunt, and maybe Daryl Henderson is in that range too. And that's interesting because that's even more reason not to take a running back in round four. If you like those,
you can wait for those guys in five.
Yeah. All right. But overall, Chris makes a great point about wide receivers just being deeper and better. From Jay, where's Jay from?
Orlando, Florida.
Yeah. Jay is Dolores' husband. I was finally able to get my league to ban kickers and add another flex. Does the second flex devalue the need to take a top three tight end? Non-PPR. Non-PPR.
No. If anything,
it kind of improves it, right?
Well, everybody still needs a tight end, and you're going to have like whatever gap you get from that top three tight end is your second flex is probably going to be a wide receiver. The way it's going to work out is there are just so many wide receivers that the gap between like the 30th best wide receiver and the 50th best wide receiver is usually pretty small, and it can come down to, you know, a couple of touchdowns over the course of a season. So you're not really, I don't think you're really introducing any other tight ends into the fold. I think it's all fringy running backs or wide receiver four.
I just want to say this is a non-PPR league. I agree. I actually do think that it devalues the tight ends because running backs just get pushed up so much to me in these leagues. And then you add another flex. I personally
tight ends are still the top three tight ends are still going to be very popular picks. I don't think it changes a whole lot.
You don't think so in non-PPR?
No, I don't. I'm not saying they necessarily are going to go in the same place that they would in PPR leagues. They're devalued because of the format, not because there's a second flex there. But they're still going to be popular picks.
You're still looking at probably a, I don't know, 70 to 80 point gap between the best tight ends and the fringy tight ends over the course of a season. I guess you can make a case that it devalues them, but that gap is still pretty big. And I don't think running back gets deeper in a non-PPR league. I think it just makes the better running backs better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Waller in non-PPR last year was running back 13, mm-hmm. and Kelsey was running back 7, I think. And he almost scored as many points as Aaron Jones, who was running back 5. So even in non-PPR, they were outstanding. So that goes against what I was saying. And Matt from Best Virginia, that must be just regular Virginia. Hmm. Dear Kirk, Dalvin, Justin, and Ragnar.
Vikings.
Ragnar. I don't have a fantasy question, but please enjoy the 2021 All Alliteration team. Mm-hmm. Quarterback is Tua Tagovailoa.
Yep.
Or Big Ben.
Nah.
Or Kirk Cousins with a bad. K.
It doesn't have to be the same letter.
Running back Ezekiel Elliott and Chris Carson.
No Josh Jacobs.
Good
Not
point.
Not good enough for even this list.
He's the flex.
Oh.
Wide receivers are Justin Jefferson, Julio Jones, and Chase Claypool.
Yeah, and those are studs.
The tight ends are Evan Ingram and Hunter Henry. Other than quarterback and tight end, this is a damn good team.
And Chase Claypool doesn't work.
I thought alliteration was the same letter. You're saying it's the same sound?
I think
sound?
It's the same sound.
So Julio Jones doesn't work either?
Yeah, I don't think Julio Jones works either.
All right, we got to check this out.
Cooper Kupp works.
Oh, wait a second. The occurrence of the same letter or sound at the beginning of adjacent or closely connected words.
Yeah,
no,
but
I think it's sound. I think
it's
sound.
Sound.
I think it's sound.
I think it's sound too.
Yeah.
So it's
Julio does not work.
Cooper Kupp. God, I feel like there should be more of these.
Tyler Tockett.
Exactly. There you go.
Finally, from Jake. I lost Cam Akers in my dynasty startup. Do you think my team is competitive or should I start my rebuild? A 12-team PPR, one quarterback league, semi-empire, he says. I got trade offers. DK Metcalf for 2 first round picks in 2022 and Jalen Waddle. It's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Aaron Jones for Javonte Williams and a first round pick in 2022. And Lamar Jackson for Trey Lance and at least an early first. These are all really good trade offers.
How do you know it's going to be an early first in 2022? You're giving the guy Lamar Jackson.
And you're giving up DK Metcalf and Lamar Jackson, especially in their primes. I think Aaron Jones, he's right on the borderline of when you should be looking to trade a running back.
DK Metcalf for 2 first round picks and Jalen Waddle, though? Whew,
that's
3
a lot.
First round picks.
Yep. I think if you're truly rebuilding, you take that trade and you take the Aaron Jones.
You do all of them.
Yeah, I don't
do
know
them.
If I do
You'll
the
be
Lamar
going
one.
Crazy. You'd own half the first round next year.
I think that's so fun. All right, these are really great trades to consider. So
Jerry Jeudy.
Oh, yeah, he's on the alliteration team.
Keelan Cole. You start to run out of useful. Christian Kirk, I think you could count. You start to run out of useful options pretty quickly. Chris Conley.
Does Ezekiel Elliott work?
Braxton Berrios. Yeah.
Braxton Berrios. This is a fun game. Thanks for the email. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow with a mailbag on Fantasy Football Today. See ya.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.